Welcome back to another episode of It's All Bad. I am Russian Danny.
I'm Keith.
I'm Mike.
And
what's up, Charlie? What's up, guys? This week we have an episode. We have a guest, a good friend of mine, a guy I've known for a while, Xander Schloss. Kind of like a fucking legend. I mean, not even kind of. Dude's a fucking legend.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
From Repo Man to Circle Jerks to just like breaking off, you know, and like
and he played with Joe Strummer and the Muscleros.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
everybody forgets
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
yeah. Played with a lot of yeah.
And he's got some great, you know, some great gems for us.
Yeah, he's got some great stories, some great philosophies, and
just a lovely
insights.
Man, too.
Yeah,
lovely
yeah.
guy.
Funny.
Seemed. It was one thing when he
loves jacuzzis.
When he was talking, loves that Jack. Yeah. Got to hop in the Jack.
I've never like his. He started the thing off with, "If I ever got rich, I'd have a fur coat I would wear into the jacuzzi."
I'd have a different fur coat every day.
Yeah, and throw it out.
Throw it out.
Fucking wild.
No,
I can't think of anything more uncomfortable than a fucking wearing a fur coat into a jacuzzi.
Sounds foul.
You're just drowning.
Just the smell.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Xander has some great stories for us about roller skating for drugs, how he became Kevin the Nerd, and just some amazing life philosophy stuff.
And if I had no idea he was Kevin the Nerd, and I've seen Repo Man many times, and I know the character Kevin, and I was like, my jaw dropped. Yeah. I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
I don't know if I got this in, but I just, it was so, the thing that struck me the most about him was that it was really interesting to hear him talk about emotions and feelings and stress and anxiety and then hear him sing about it. And when he sings, you're just like, oh, yeah, you remember. You're like, you're one of those otherworldly creatures who can communicate their emotions through music. It's like magic. It's like the one thing that's, you know.
And it's so cool to see, like, you know, I mean, like, fuck, you think about the Circle Jerks. You think about, like, other stuff that he's played in, you know? And then you hear, like, this is, like, his passion. This is where his heart is, like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's, man, it's so cool.
Awesome.
Alan and I went to see him play at the Mayfair Hotel.
Mm.
You know where that is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which was not a nice place to go see a show at, you know, fucking 2 years ago.
No.
We went and saw him play, and we were, like, holding back tears, you know? It's so beautiful.
No, it's crazy, and it's... You know, I don't know. Music is like movies. It's like different. It's like, you know, I don't know. Whatever. Please, Charlie, cut out that whatever I just said about music. Jesus H. Christ. All I'm saying is that it's powerful to hear the man sing his songs.
Yeah, you're in for a treat. Thanks for listening. Let's get into it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be really cool.
There's some of those stories, I promise you, that none of us are going to want to hear. Like, you know what I mean? Those, like, hi, cringe. See, that was a cold open.
Yeah.
I got you right into some random story. You're like, what the fuck is this dude talking about? And then you feel like you got the wrong channel, and here we are, and we're in It's All Bad, and we have a special guest.
Who?
Well, which one of you guys is closest to our special guest?
Oh, Danny.
Yeah.
Oh, so the surprise. Maybe you should reveal.
Well, we got Xander Schloss with us today.
Hello.
I've known Xander for a while.
Yeah.
Fun fact, Xander's never done drugs before.
Yeah. No, I think I maybe knew Danny before Danny knew me.
Yeah. I think you knew me before I knew myself, too.
Yeah,
fuck.
I really do. Yeah.
I'm assuming that's a joke. Is that a joke? You've never done drugs before?
Of course I've done drugs.
All right. I don't know. Listen, it's not just about drugs. Like, people come here for all different reasons. We got people here.
Really?
Well, there's usually a drug element involved, but sometimes we had that one... our buddy, Christ Almighty.
Uncle Vic?
What? No, Uncle Vic is just an insane person.
Yeah, he's not a drug guy, though. Yeah.
No. I mean, not
he's
really a nuts. Drug guy. He's a great belcher. and then we had, God, why am I blanking on his name? The young kid who beats off.
Oh,
Lawrence.
Lawrence, oh. who
but
I love.
He, if it wasn't drugs. For meth, he wouldn't just be beaten off, you know?
I don't know. Honestly. I think that he might still beat off a little bit. Yeah. And when I say a little bit, I mean 5 to 7 to 8 times a day.
Because edging.
Yeah.
Edging.
Ooh.
Yeah. Could you turn your mic a little bit?
Yeah.
Hey, is this okay? Check.
We're in year 1.5. Sound Keith's here. Like, how's the mic work? What are we doing? Just
how
a
come
lamp?
His mic's louder than mine. I have mic envy.
Get as close as you can.
I get,
sounds dark.
I'm sorry. I talk loud, too. It's
okay. Thing. I'm going to talk lower than you.
Xander, have you ever had a drug give you a wrong handshake? Like, do you wrong?
Oh, yeah. Most deaf.
Yeah.
I'm having this drug right now, man. It's like I've been sober for something like 14 and a half years. This damn Juul is kicking my ass. I played it like a fife today on Instagram to the tune of, what was it? It was Live and Let Die.
Yeah.
Because I've been hearing about all this Juul lung disease, but it's like, dude, talking about drugs, it's like even in sobriety, I'm chewing 4 milligram gum, nicotine gum, as we speak, and smoking the Juul.
Attaboy.
That's what reminds me that it's probably not safe to drink and use yet.
Is that a sober speedball?
No, not really. It's just a sober fucking nicotine, like, bonanza. I mean, I literally, like, when I was on tour, I was chewing this nicotine gum, and I've been not smoking for about 5 years. I know this is not, well, yeah. It is a drug, but
yeah.
I'd wake up from a nap.
It's a fucking drug.
I'd wake up from a nap in a sitting position in the passenger seat and cough out a cylindrical shaped piece of gum that was lodged in my windpipe.
No way.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes I wake up, like I chew it. The moment I wake up, it's on my headboard. I pop a piece in. And when I go to sleep, sometimes I forget to take it out. And I wake up and I'll find gum stuck to my beard and in my mm-hmm. hair that I got to clip out. Yeah. And it's like the smoking, man. It's like I smoked 2.5 packs of Camel Straights a day since I was 12 years old.
Yep.
And then one night, which I will refer to as the carnitas incident, I was eating like too many carnitas and coughing a lot because of smoking all, you know, so many cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And I coughed and I felt a little bubble come out of my abdomen, and I pushed on it and it pushed back in through my abdomen. I'd coughed so hard smoking that I tore a hole in my abdomen from smoking.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Damn. Like almost like a hernia.
Yeah.
Oh.
It is like a hernia. It is a hernia.
Oh, man.
An abdominal hernia.
Yeah. Sometimes I get a pain down there. Listen, I'm always in some sort
of pain. Let's all talk about our ailments.
No, could you get a look at this real quick?
Yeah, but has a drug ever done me wrong? I mean,
no.
You know,
fuck.
I mean, I guess, yeah, all of them did me wrong. That's why I'm here. We all can relate.
Yeah. I could definitely relate to that.
Did you ever smoke PCP?
You know, once by accident, somebody, I was playing, of course I'm a rock star. I was playing a show opening up for Susie and the Banshees on Long Island, and somebody before the show says, "Hey man, try some of the Long Island Killer," or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I smoked this joint that was laced with PCP. And during the show, I mean, it's a very athletic and active show, I was jumping in, like, I was literally jumping off the ground 6 feet in the air, and veins were bulging out of my neck.
And Jesus Christ.
I got off the stage, and I'm in a second story, you know, the dressing room's on the second story. And then some kid approaches me, and I was in this movie called Repo Man. I played Kevin the Nerd. And I sang a song called the 7-Up song. So this kid comes up to me and he's like, "Hey, you're the guy from Repo Man. Sing the 7-Up song." And I freaked out and I jumped out a second story window and just started landing on my feet and just started running as fast as I could.
Dude, I am an idiot. That's so funny. I did not put that together. I did not put together that you were, well, this was, you were, it was sort of a last minute, forgive me, I haven't done my research, my homework. Well, because we don't have the internet here
yeah.
at the office.
Yeah, we don't.
No.
Have, we don't.
And I can't read. But we did fucking Repo Man.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, man. I might be the first archetype of nerds that followed in that era. You know, the Breakfast Club and all that kind of stuff.
Pre-Ducky. You were exactly.
And some think that I might be the inspiration for Napoleon Dynamite. If you watch the film, you'll see. And if you see my graduation picture from high school, I looked exactly like the guy.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Was that fun as hell making Repo Man?
Yeah, it was great. But I mean,
how old were you?
I had just turned 21 years old.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And some will say that I might be responsible for the faux hawk because the story is, since I got the role in Repo Man, I was working as a PA, and they gave me the role. And then the same day they said Sean Penn's little brother, Chris Penn, he's going to do it.
Oh.
And so I was like, fuck you, man. I am Kevin the Nerd. I'll show you. And the next day I showed up to work, you know, picking up cigarette butts on the lot and doing whatever they told me to do.
Yeah.
With a mohawk, but I was like, this would be funny if I just didn't shave my head down all the way and came with a mohawk. And that was the first faux hawk.
Oh.
I am responsible for the faux hawk.
Wow.
And I eventually got the job. Michael Nesmith, who was formerly of the Monkees, you know, he was the executive producer, and I was bringing the reels for them to view that day, and he saw Chris Penn acting, and God bless his soul, he's dead now, so we shouldn't be talking shit about him. But Michael saw it. He said, God, this is terrible. What are we going to do? And I heard
I cannot imagine Chris Penn in that role.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense.
And I heard Alex said, well, I wanted to give Xander a shot at it, and Michael was like, give him a shot.
Yeah.
But they didn't tell me for another 2 weeks, so I just went around the set in character with my faux hawk.
Yeah. And that's no diss on Chris Penn. I love Chris Penn. He was great. But I can't imagine that particular role. And the fact that in a movie so legit in terms of punk rock Trojan horsing into pop culture,
yeah.
right? Like, you know, and through cinema, like in a movie that was so legit like that, you know, to have a hairstyle that is the opposite of legit,
right?
Which is incredible.
Well,
right?
That was Kevin's thing. It's like he wanted to be a punk, but
right.
he wasn't punk,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Adam Levine.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, that movie was not a hit. It went to you know, into the theaters and was quickly taken out of the theaters.
Out, yeah.
But based on the soundtrack album sales,
yep.
they put it back in the theaters for a national release.
Oh, I didn't know
and
that.
And that was actually the first compilation soundtrack in a movie. I believe that was the first one that where the soundtrack actually helped to sell the movie.
Wow.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah.
Dude, recently, speaking of soundtrack movies, just saw Flashdance again, which is just an amazing, it's such a trip to watch. You're just like, this is another kind, it may as well be from the teens as it could be from the 80s.
You know? Dude, yeah.
This is a whole different way of making movies and everything else. But you see the genius of those dudes who were like, we're going to string together 20 music videos. And we're going to pick a song for each one of those music videos. And so then when this movie gets out there in the world, we're just going to cut the piece off of, turn these into a bunch of music videos for these fucking songs and have free marketing on MTV the entire time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you're just like, oh my God. And they called Don Simpson a maniac. It's like, that dude is a fucking genius.
And those exercise clothes back then. Oh my God. Dude. So good. You know, when they dump the water on the girl and she arches her back. I mean, I still jack off thinking about that. That's like vintage jack-off material.
It's strong stuff. It is. Yeah. It's very evocative material.
Well, now that we covered that.
Kind of like going back to one every time.
Yeah.
When did you... I have one question.
Mm.
How long were you with the Circle Jerks?
Well, it's funny. I met the Circle Jerks. I've been with the Circle Jerks like since 1985, early 1985.
Okay. Yeah. The year I was born.
Yeah. And by the way, the Circle Jerks are reuniting. I'm just going to do a shameless self.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck plug. Yeah.
Circle Jerks are reuniting in 2020. It's been a 10-year hiatus. We've been sort of on permanent hiatus, but we're back.
Oh, yeah, nice. I love the Circle Jerks.
Yeah, I met them on the set of Repo Man, and I was like,
"Really?"
Yeah, I was like, "Hey guys, I'm Kevin. I'm Xander. I play Kevin the Nerd." And they just kind of walked by me. And it's a weird story. Like, I was living in this office building between Cosmo and Ivar on Hollywood Boulevard, called the Palmer Building, for $100 a month. And you know, like, no bathroom, no kitchen, no TV, no telephone, no nothing. But one day I'm walking down Hollywood Boulevard counting pennies to buy a burrito down at that burrito stand that was next to the Frolic Room, and somebody pulls up in a car and they say, "Hey, Circle Jerks are auditioning for bass players." I'm like, "Why the fuck are you telling me?" They said, "You look like you could use a gig, kid." You know what I mean? And I had stopped working all like my little straight jobs and stuff. I was setting up Circus Vargas when it would come in town, like with pulling up the tent with the elephants and stuff.
Oh, rad.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like my story is Dickensian. I mean, it's like,
you were setting up a circus.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
Wait, you were a fucking awesome. Carny.
Yeah, kind of like, but
that's only amazing.
Yeah, only when it would come in town, and like, you know, you'd have to tear down the tiger and lion cages, and you'd walk this plank in the fucking lion and tiger truck, and the paws would come up from the sides
while
you're walking the plank with these 100-pound like iron bars.
Fuck. Jesus Christ.
That's amazing.
You know, that was just one of 100 bottoms that I had. And that wasn't even like when I was doing hard drugs.
Well, I mean, wow. That you don't even know what to say. That's amazing. Question? Anybody?
So you like roller skating?
Oh, he wants to hear the roller skating part.
Oh, I want to. All right, I want to hear the roller skating for sure.
So I'm strung out on heroin. I'm working. That's a good start, right? And I'm working at this place called Taxi Music Service. I'd been canned from Interscope Records. I was, part of the whole like mass firing, you know, that happened in the late 90s of all the bands that weren't Mouseketeers. And so I'm working as a music critic, kind of like and content editor at this place called Taxi Music Service. And I'd have to do heroin to do it, because it's like suddenly I've gone from being a, you know, signed artist to like being the gatekeeper and listening to just the worst music. I'd have to go in the bathroom and like do some heroin and come back out. Pretty soon I started like writing these critiques like, "Save your money, save, or you're never going to see the wife and kids again." And then I wrote something that of like, "Put this in a shoebox and listen, and put it under your bed, and when you're sad and blue, listen to it, but by no means let anybody else hear this." And then one day I came in and I just wrote, "I hate everything I hear." And they called me in the office and fired me. So this is kind of like towards like this particular bottom that happened. But anyway, so I'm driving home on the freeway from Calabasas and it's getting late. I'm trying to contact the drug dealer and he's not answering the phone. I'm panicking because I'm starting to get dope sick. So I'm right around where the 405 and the 101 are. And I just passed, like, I'm right around Van Nuys in the 101, and I kind of look up from, like, texting him to, "I've hit 4 cars." And so I'm just sitting in there in my wrecked car and, basically have my head down and thinking, "Oh, God, I'm going to have to kick in jail." That's the only thing I could think about. They're carrying a lady out on a stretcher in front of me, and all I could think about was, "Oh, shit. I'm going to have to fucking kick dope in jail." And miraculously, the police didn't come and pick me up. But the tow driver the tow truck driver came and picked me up. And I was like, hey, man, can you stop by the gas station and get a pack of cigarettes on the way? So he's like, okay. So we pull over. Then he puts my completely totaled car in front of my house. Not my house, but whatever, my little one-room fucking place. And I was like, so I finally got a hold of the drug dealer, and I was like, it's raining, and I was like, how am I going to get down there? I don't have a car. So I put on my roller skates, and I bomb the hill, and I go down and get the drugs on Alvarado, and I'm in the alley doing my drugs and stuff.
In the skates?
Yeah, on the roller skates. So the next day, I was thinking, oh, man, my car is totaled. What am I going to do with this thing? I live just above Elysian Park. That was the big hill that I Scott.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big fucking hill.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
oh, okay. Fuck. You bombed that hill?
I bombed that hill on my roller skates.
You went down Scott?
Yeah.
That's like fucking next to Baxter, basically, right? Like,
I know.
That's, Jesus Christ.
So anyway, the next day, I'm thinking, what am I going to do with this car? So
insanity.
I had this brilliant idea, and I got a screwdriver, and I started prying all the VIN plates off the car. And then I had one of my friends come down and push the car into Elysian Park, and then I doused it with lighter fluid and lit it on fire.
Were you wearing the roller skates when you did that?
No, I wasn't on the roller skates then. But
were you wearing a suit in the roller skates?
Pretty much.
Fuck.
Yes.
That makes my day.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck.
Just 1-800-CARS-FOR-KIDS. Yeah, I got a car I'd like you to pick up. It's on fire right now in Elysian Park. God,
Xander was good friends with Mike Weiland, who
I found Mike Weiland dead.
Oh, that's right.
Ooh.
Yeah, I was the guy who found him.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up.
No, it reminded me because your Alvarado story, because him and I were in rehab, and he told me that he had went to MacArthur Park. He didn't have any money, and he traded his jeans, his Levi's, for a $5 hit of rock.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And then he didn't wear underwear. And I knew that because we were in rehab together. And I go, how'd you get home? He pulled the trash bag out of a fucking trash can and wore that home.
Oh.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, poor Mike. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a terrible thing, yeah. You know, his, I guess, girlfriend or whatever at the time was texting me and calling me, and she said, I think Mike's going to hurt himself or somebody else. And yeah, I went with her, and I crawled through the window. I saw Mike in his bed and went over, and he was gone, man. It was like foam coming out of his mouth, and his body was stiff and cold. I really don't think that Mike intended for that to happen. But, you know, it's like I learned a lesson that day because Mike would talk to me about his situation with his wife and kids. And I'd say, yeah, I had a similar situation with a girl. And I'm like, no, I didn't. I didn't have a wife and kids. And Mike would be that, you know, like really protesting, like me, like sharing my stories with him. And I thought to myself after Mike died, I was like, you can talk about this thing called alcoholism, but you cannot measure the depth of a human heart.
Right.
You know what I mean? You cannot measure the depth of which a person feels the pain that they're feeling due to heartbreak.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I never did that again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
He was a fucking great guy.
Really great guy. And, you know, I worked with his brother, and that's where I met Mike. And it's really sad because Scott, I think, you know, I don't think Scott would have wanted to go out that way either.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
You know, and his poor parents, you know, they lost both
Jesus
boys.
H.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just brutal.
Yeah.
Now, that's an incredibly astute thing. I've actually not heard it put quite.
Me and Mike PA'd together. Me and Mike were PAs together.
Yeah.
That when I first started in this business, because him and I were in Impact. And then, dude, fucking, I mean, some of the funniest shit that dude would have me in fucking tears.
He was great, dude. I miss him all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. He was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, and you know, the weird thing that happened to me, and I call it the ice age of my recovery. I think I had had about a year and a half, you know, sober, and I stopped crying every day, and pretty soon I didn't experience any joy, and I didn't experience any sadness, and I was like, what's going on with my emotions? And when I found Mike, I felt completely emotionless and just called 911, called his family, And then I went to Sundance with my mistress at the time. And I'm walking like in the bathroom. I'm going to the bathroom that night. I was like, wow, this is a swanky condo. Are the floors heated? And she said, no. And my feet were burning up on the bathroom tiles. And then I got into bed and I started shaking uncontrollably and started like profusely sweating. And I experienced like post-traumatic reaction to finding Mike.
Oh,
and I started crying uncontrollably. And that was kind of what released my emotions again, you know, and I hate to say it, but it's like, you know, it renewed my conviction that what I was doing by staying clean and sober was the right thing to do. You know what I mean? And it's terrible that we have examples of people that we love, you know, that unfortunately can be inspiration.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It sounds ironic, but
yeah,
it was an inspiration to me.
Yeah.
You know,
we had Blackie on here and
Blackie was my first sponsor.
Oh, really?
I got to tell you the Blackie story. So Blackie was my sponsor when I was in Pasadena Recovery Center. And Blackie would say, yeah, if you're not having as much fun in recovery as you did when you were doing drugs, you might as well do drugs. So I was like, oh, that's an interesting concept. Okay, I'm not having any fun. So, but anyway, I was like, you know, I met a girl and I fell in love in rehab, and we decided one night, we said to ourselves, why can't we have wine with our dinner?
Yeah.
And I said, why can't we have wine with our dinner? So I went down and got a bottle of wine. I was like, drank a half a glass. She drank the rest of it. And, you know, that was good for me because we had, you know, a romantic interlude. But the next day I was like, you know what? Fuck wine. I'm going to fucking go down and get a bottle of vodka and make some screwdrivers. I'm like, you know, after that, I was like, hey, I don't really like getting drunk. I want to find some heroin. So I started calling people that I thought I saw on the nod at the meeting. So I was like, hey, Jimmy. Hey, this is Xander, man. I thought I saw you nodding out at the Musicians Union meeting the other day. And he's like, wrong Jimmy, Xander. I'm the Jimmy with 14 years sober that knows all your friends. It's like, fuck it. The cat's out of the bag. And so I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to fucking do? And then it dawned on me. Blackie had gone out 3 months before me. And I was like, you idiot. Call your sponsor. I called Blackie, and Blackie brought it right over to me.
It works if you work it.
And gave me the guy's number. And I was off and off, you know, running for the next 2 years. Thank you, Blackie.
Dude, that's amazing.
Yeah.
What a lovely, I mean, albeit maybe that was a misstep, but I would say. You think so?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a doctor, so I can't say that I know. But he's such a lovely guy. I had such an immediate affection for that
he
man.
He is wonderful.
He really is. There is a sweetness to him that is, that I don't know. With my sense of judgment tells me he's got to be a serial murderer.
Yeah.
No, but you know, I'm good with people usually, and I'll say there's a sweetness to him that I really was drawn to. Anyway, wow. Sorry about how he got you all back into drugs
for a couple of years. No, it's fine, dude. It's what I wanted. You know what
That's
I mean?
Right. That's
and right. I'd have to say that, you know, after crashing the cars and burning down, you know, the burning the car and like my apartment caught on fire shortly after that, and I had to leave my little opium den, and I lost my fiance, the girl that I met in rehab, who we will call Kate the Great. And, you know, I went into, it's funded by Music Cares and the Grammy mm-hmm. Foundation. They put me back in rehab, and I stayed that time for the whole 30 days, and then, you know, I said, hey, baby, you know, I'm coming home. My 30 days are up. And she's like, well, if you come home, I'm moving out. And so I was like, okay. And I went to sober living for 3 months.
Mm.
And then, you know, I'd see her in meetings, and pretty soon I didn't see the engagement ring on the finger. And then I played Don't Think Twice in the parking lot to her after the meeting. That's my whole like kind of like meh breakup kind of song. You know, pretty soon she didn't want to be my girlfriend. She didn't want to be my friend. She didn't want to be my fiance. She didn't want to live with me. And I literally was heartbroken for the first year and a half. And all I would talk to my sponsor, Sonny, who was my next sponsor, about every day was Kate the Great. And Sonny said to me one day, he said, "Xander, what do you do when you obsess on drugs?" And I said, "Well, eventually I use them." He says, "Well, what do you do when you obsess on people?" I was like, "Holy shit.
Oh shit.
I've been using this situation, this woman to, you know, as an excuse to maybe relapse or not do the work on myself to recover." And you know what happened? I thought to myself, "Well, don't pick up the drugs no matter what. Well, don't pick up the fucking phone and try to contact her, you know, and wish her a happy Martin Luther King's Day."
Yeah. know, I mean, right? Those things. Just like, "Hey, I just got a new faucet from Moen." You ever use water before?
Yeah, but you're literally like texting the girl going, "Happy Martin Luther King's Day," and fishing for a response that never comes. And then you're like, "Fuck, I'm a fucking piece of shit. Nobody loves me. Nobody cares. Nobody wants to or dares."
It's funny, man. Blackie and Mike are kind of the ones who I like learned about, you know, sobriety shit, because all of us were in treatment. And, you know, at Impact, there's nothing, you know, all you do is sit on this courtyard all day. You know, there's no TVs or any of that kind of shit. Not how I pictured rehab, you know. And
wait, they take away television?
I think there's a TV like on Sundays you could watch football or something. There's no TVs in there.
What the hell is that about?
I think it's because they want you to sit there and fucking read the literature and do, like, you can't read books. You know what I mean? You can read like program literature or whatever.
Oh, you can't bring your own books and stuff in
No, not in Impact. Maybe, when we were all there. Okay. But those guys, they had all known each other because they were all part, like, they were all LA musician dudes. Like, like Xander, all that whole crowd of them. Like, because there was a lot of dudes in and out of there. But the weird thing is, like, I think I talked about this when Blackie was here, but that was I got there in 98. And Mike was already there. Blackie got there early 99. But fucking all the men that were there with us, I believe the only ones I know that are, I mean, fuck, there's so many dead ones, you know? The majority of them are dead.
Yeah.
Jesus. A handful of the women, more of the women stayed sober from that. And it was a lot less women. You know what I mean? Like, the house was 20% women, probably 80% men, but so many fucking dudes that we were there with died. Me and Blackie were talking about it the other night.
Yeah.
It's fucking treacherous, you know?
So the odds are not good.
No.
But the goods are odd.
Yeah.
That's from going to NA. Yeah. I went to NA my first 5 years.
I did too. Well, for the first like 2 years.
Yeah. What's the big difference? What's the main difference?
Hugs.
Do you get more hugs in NA?
More hugs in NA.
Oh, okay. Got it.
No, but people are really, they're like, I go to AA and they'd say, "Hey, man, those are some really nice snakeskin boots." And I'd be like, "Yo, brother, don't you see the fucking dude in the cloak behind me with a dagger at my neck trying to fucking kill me? I'm here to save my life."
Yeah.
And they're like, "Whoa, bro, fucking simmer down." But in NA, that was like, you know, that was the norm.
Yeah.
We're really going there to save our lives. And it was really, really a severe, you know, situation for me.
Yeah.
And as we see, as time goes on, many, many people die from this disease. And I don't think I was going to make, I don't think, nobody thought I was going to make it in my first 2 years.
Got it.
When I came in a detox, you know, and like I have friends that, you know, Big John and like other, you know, dudes like that, like he was working detox, like right when I got there day one, you know, and they were like, "We didn't, not only did we not think you were going to fucking not like make it, we didn't think you were going to live through detox. Like we thought you, like we'd like, you know, they're like, we might as well," Eli's like, "we might as well have been taking bets on fucking, you know, on like how long," like they're like, "you came in so fucked that like we thought you were going to die in detox." You know?
I was 125 pounds wet when I came in. I gained a whole nother 125 pounds. I doubled in size. From eating ice cream every night. They say pick up the spoon and put down the spoon and pick up the fork. I put down the spoon and picked up the spoon.
The ice cream spoon.
Yeah.
Well, you look fine. It's a lovely suit.
I mean, yeah. Thank you.
You do look great.
Don't you see the dude with the fucking cloak on and the dagger?
Oh, I do, actually. I see him. I see him. Yeah.
He's still there.
Are you going to play us a song, Xander?
Do you
oh,
want
yes.
me to?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
I don't know. Is this thing going to sound okay?
I think so.
Yeah, this will be better. The song, I haven't really played this one live yet, so if I fuck up, please forgive me. But I think it's relevant to what we're talking about, you know. Okay. All my songs, somebody asked me, yeah. And I said, well, you know, I said I'll play songs that are relevant to my story, which are all of them. So it doesn't matter which song I play, they're all relevant to this particular story. All right, let's see if I can do this. I'm gonna take my glasses off and get prepared here. It's called The Trouble I've Seen. Sill, you knew what I'd seen. Stubborn, wishing well, you knew what I dreamed. As killing words are faintly whispered, a bullet in the night. There's no one who knows the trouble that I see.
That sounds cool. Great.
Jeez, man.
You're the first person to play a song for us on the podcast.
Yeah.
I hope
it sounded like 30 okay.
Episodes
it sounded
incredible.
Incredible.
Yeah. See, you know, I might be an affable, funny guy on the outside, but inside, I'm fucking dark. You know, but the thing about that song is that it actually speaks to the absurdity. There's no one who knows the trouble that I've seen, which is absurd, because many of us, this is why we're all here, and this is the actual cure for what we have, is relating to one another about this particular subject. Mm-hmm. And I thought that, you know, people would take that seriously, but it's actually an absurd concept. Nobody knows the trouble I've seen. There's many that do. We all understand. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We all understand, but nobody gets that when they hear it. They don't see the irony in that.
Yeah.
You know?
It's the truth. You hear that expression, and people tell me that. People tell me that. That's crazy. Because I've been telling myself this morning. So those aren't people, Mike. Those are you talking to yourself. But I've been trying to do this thing where I at least remember, as I get frustrated, as I tend to get frustrated, and sometimes I have issues with my anger, and not even necessarily that it's an act out thing as much, but it's internal. I've realized, you know, you really, as you walk around there, you see people and you tell yourself, well, or at least I've been trying to tell myself, like, I have no idea what that person is going through today. Like, I have no idea what that dude or that lady's morning was like. Like, I don't know what phone call they got 15 minutes ago before they had a sourpuss that I looked at and internalized, because I'm a selfish creature only focused on myself. So of course, someone's facial expression has to do with me. And it has nothing to do with me. And in my moment, you know, like, they don't know what I'm going, you know. But I think what your insight is even better, because, or not better, that's the wrong word. But, like, it's just more, it's another perspective on it, which is that, like, ultimately, we do all know what we are all going through.
Yeah.
And all we're all going through one way of dealing with sadness or another. You know, it's sometimes that means it's the happiness we feel with our friends and our family and these great moments and these moments in our lives and these achievements that we have or these things that we've associated with. But ultimately, at any given moment, like, we're all kind of going through the same way of negotiating this sadness.
You know, it's like but we don't need to spill it out into the fucking world. It's like, I try to bring, like, on the outside, when I'm not writing my very depressing songs, I'm trying to, like, spread a little bit of light and sunshine wherever I go. But here's something that I take with me everywhere I go when I encounter another person, because I know I'm coming from a sad story and going towards another sad story inevitably. You know what I mean? It's because there is going to be sickness and there is going to be death in my future.
Of course.
You know what
I
mean?
In all of our futures,
and
there's
when
no
I
way
look
around it.
At you, and you, you know, you might not want to hear this, but I know that you're coming from a sad story and also going to a sad story. And therefore, it's like we're all on the same level in this place called the world that we're living in. And, you know, to have compassion for people knowing that and negotiate your grief around it, you know what I mean? Because, you know, it's like that will help you. Once you have negotiated your grief and come to accept your grief about being alive, you're free.
Yeah,
true.
I mean, it sucks. Some people don't want to do it. They're kicking and screaming and fighting the whole fucking way, and that's no way to live, man.
No, and it certainly isn't any way to die.
Yeah. No.
And we are all going to go that way in fighting it.
And that's why I try to fucking surround myself around people that fucking, that want, you know, like Keith, like you always say, you know, and fucking, like, like around people that fucking want to fucking laugh and have a good time and like enjoy the fucking time, you know? Because that's like what life is to me. It's really just like about like it's just like a bunch of experiences, you know? And I could either be a fucking asshole and I could be bummed and I could be fucking really angry and fucking a dick, or I could just like enjoy the moments that I have with the people that I love and that I love to like surround myself with. You know?
Well, it's also
and even some people that I don't, you know, like fuck.
It's also fucking absurd, Danny.
It is, yeah.
Like, and it's like if you can fucking laugh at what's going on around you, you know. I mean, it's like it'll make it a lot easier. I once told my one of my ex-fiancées, "I'm just here to entertain and be entertained," and she looked at me like you. Fucking son of a bitch. But the truth of the matter is that is really fucking, if you really look at that statement, it's true, man. It's like, come on, let's have a fucking laugh while we're here.
Yeah.
We're not such big fucking deals, man.
No.
You know?
No, yeah. For sure.
And I do this thing sometimes. I did this during the summer, what I call a tactile day.
Mm.
And I talked to a guy who was a Buddhist monk about this because he asked me, you know, who are you? Are you your feelings? Are you your thoughts? Are you what you do? Like all this stuff. And I said, I am my senses here in the earthly realm. And what I would do is I would have a day called a tactile day where I would go to the beach. I'd get some snacks. You know what I mean? And I would not talk to anybody that day. So I would taste, smell, see, hear, and feel everything around me for an entire 24 hours. And that would, you know, and watch the incredibly productive things that were going on, like the moon is rising, the sun's going down, the tide's coming up, the tide's going down, and just realize, well, this is what life is all about. And some would say, well, that's how the animals live. And I said, yes, that's how the animals live, but you don't see animals having existential crises.
Not that they've started telling me.
No. Right?
They seem pleased. Yeah. All reports are they're doing great. Yeah.
So it may not be spiritual, but it's like it gets your feet on the fucking ground. You know what I mean? Where we live. We are here in the earthly realm. We are not in heaven up above. You know, and life is what you make it. They don't call it fucking working life. They don't call it fucking hating. Yeah, they do call it hating life, but they really call it living life. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. So live your fucking life and then call it a fucking life. That's your life.
Yeah.
There's no take backs.
Xander, have you ever seen a ghost?
It's funny you should mention that because this is my most Dickensian story. So when my parents split up, I was living in St. Louis, Missouri. I was born in St. Louis. And my mom moved downtown, and I got a job working as a janitor in a candy factory downtown. 12-year-old kid, right? Wow. Unlimited candy, all I could eat.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
And I just have to, like, kind of mop the floors and sweep the floors and stuff like that. So it was a place called Bissinger's, and Carl Bissinger, the guy who started the company, had hung himself up in the licorice room on the second floor. I think it was like in the 1800s or something like that. Really
hung
old.
Hung himself in the licorice room?
In the licorice room.
Jesus.
With licorice?
Well, yeah. He didn't take the licorice out before he hung himself. So anyway, they had an intercom system, and I, you know, with the intercom system, you would hear after people had left the second floor, these sounds up there. And one day I was sweeping up in the corn, the licorice room, where there's cornstarch all over the floor. That's how they solidify the licorice. And as I'm sweeping the cornstarch out of the cloud of cornstarch, an apparition appeared of a man in a top hat and tails.
Fuck.
And I ran out of there and never came back. But that job was actually how I made enough money to buy my first guitar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Whoa. And so it was a cloud, like you were, it sort of, you were kicking up the corn meal
or
the corn starch. And so it was powdering up and you saw it clearly.
A clear apparition.
Fuck.
Yeah. Fuck. That was only the first ghost. I don't want to tell you all my ghost stories.
We'll take one more.
One more. I know, just one more. I don't know what it is. We love the ghost stories on the show.
Well, I mean, recently in LeClaire, I think it was LeClaire, Iowa?
Mm.
Or is it? Yeah, I think it's. Is it Iowa or Indiana? No.
I'm not sure.
It's kind of a shit.
I'm not sure where I am.
Well, this
right
little
now.
Town called LeClaire. I was staying with this lady, and she took me on a tour of the house, and we went downstairs, and there were some dugout sort of like rooms in the basement. I was like, "What's this?" And she said, "Well, this was part of the Underground Railroad."
Oh,
whoa!
And later on that night, we went out singing karaoke, and I'm sober. Everybody was getting drunk, and I don't know. I think I sang George Jones. What was the song that he sings about the baby carriage? You know,
wait.
He stopped loving her?
That's about killing himself.
No.
No, no, no.
No.
That's what that... No.
Oh, it is, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's
yeah.
over there, stands... The nursery. Well, she left me without mercy.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Wait.
Oh, she left me without mercy. Right. Fuck.
Anyway, we'll figure it out. Yeah. We'll consult the Oracle.
I love George Jones.
We'll consult the Oracle, but anyway.
No show.
So I go back from the karaoke place, and I'm thinking, fuck it, man. I just want to go to sleep. And I get into the bed, and I hear all this singing going on. It sounds like people are singing hymns. And I thought, oh, God, these drunk motherfuckers have come home, and they're continuing the karaoke party in the backyard. And the next day I come down and I said, you know, Danielle, I heard singing in the backyard. Did you guys come home and continue the party? She said, no, we've heard that before. It was the ghosts from the Underground Railroad
Fuck.
That were singing.
Oh, that's amazing.
Hymns.
Mm. Wow. That's incredible.
So I heard ghosts.
Yeah.
I didn't just see them. I heard them. I've heard ghosts.
And you've seen them.
I've seen them and heard them.
Wow.
Damn.
That's fuck. Really cool.
That's great.
Yeah.
Damn. You got any holiday stories for us?
Any God, people? You don't want to hear about my holiday. I just had the worst Thanksgiving of my life.
Really?
Yeah. So my stepdad, who's 93, just took a fall and broke his pelvis, went in the hospital. And my mom's old school. She's in the house all alone. She doesn't know how to pay the bills. She doesn't trust, like, that the you know if she pays online or you know with credit card that it's going to happen, so she's like I can't find the checkbook and they're going to turn the lights off and they're going to turn the phone off and stuff, and I'm like oh my God, Danny, can I get off work and go visit my mother? Danny's my boss. He's like sure, you got to ask Rich. Rich is my boss. It's like I'm in the movie Platoon. I'm caught between Elias and Barnes.
Oh, God.
Danny being Elias. But anyway, so I get the time off. I go down there in the rain and in the traffic, and I get down there, and we go to the nursing home to see my 93-year-old stepdad, and he's not doing well. Nursing home is a terrible place to be. And then later on, my sister... Melanie, who is, I think she's 65, and she's been an alcoholic forever. We go to the restaurant, and turns out the restaurant that she chose is the restaurant where my stepdad took the fall and broke his pelvis.
No way.
And the food is fucking terrible.
Oh, God.
My mom didn't want to cook, obviously. You know, she's got a lot on her plate. No pun intended.
Yeah.
And then my sister Melanie comes in. Her face is starting to become unrecognizable from alcoholism. Her face is puffy and her eyes are almost swollen shut from it.
Oh, God.
And she starts to break down and cry in public at the dinner table with the whole family there.
Oof.
And like whimpering in my ear asking me to help her. You know what I mean? And I've never seen her like that. But anyway, and her husband's 80 years old, and he's in bad shape. You know, she looks like she's going to die. My stepdad looks like he's going to die. And then I get in my car to drive home back up to L.A. from San Diego, and my engine light comes on, and I have to drive in my car through the torrential rain with my engine light on the whole time. Dude,
oof.
It was fucking horrible.
Yeah, that's a crappy one.
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
Did you find the checkbook? Did you find the checkbook?
No.
No.
The lights are going off.
No.
Mom's sitting in the dark.
No, no, no.
No heat.
No, no.
Eddie,
God forbid.
poor old lady.
But she's in good health. She's very sturdy. I mean, I'm scared of her. She looks like she kicked my ass.
It starts to be nice when you, yeah. The qualities of tenacity that can be very difficult with parents when they're younger. You know, I think about that with my old man. I'm like, you.
He's 80-something, right?
My dad is 82. Yeah. And I'm like, you're... Your lizard qualities will help you in the end.
Yeah.
Like, you will, you'll bury every single fucking one of us, won't you?
Here's the other thing is that, you know, my mom knows that I work in treatment.
Yeah.
And, you know, she asked me, so, you know, what kind of drugs are these kids doing and blah, blah, blah. Basically, my mother has asked me the last three or four times that I visit her to get her drugs to assist her suicide or overdose. God.
Oh,
and, you know, I've said to her, Mom, you know, first of all, I'm your son. This is very inappropriate. Second of all, I'm not going to fucking assist you in your suicide. I work in treatment trying to save people's lives.
Yeah.
And then this time she did it again. And I said, Mom, this is the last time I'm going to tell you. I'm not going to fucking help you with this. And I want you to stop asking me. Like, and you know what? It's a wonder that I didn't turn out to be a fucking serial killer with an emasculating fucking mother who's, you know, trying to, like, you know, guilt me into, like, you know, helping her to die.
Oh, God.
My friend's dad went and helped his brother die in Oregon.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she should move to Oregon.
Was he see you in Oregon, Mom? Was he sick? You know, was he sick in that?
Yeah,
kind of, yeah, yeah, yeah. Listen, I think it's everybody's right. If they want to do it, they can do it. But I don't think you need to be like, yeah,
pressuring,
pressuring people. Hey, she's can you hook me up with that?
Health.
Hey, yeah.
She's just miserable and scared and worried. And I, you know, it's like old age doesn't fucking look good.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Fuck.
This is all coming for us if we're lucky.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I'm sorry, man. This is, I mean, I laugh about this stuff, but it's fucking serious.
Yeah, you know? It's interesting. I am. Yeah. I'm in the eye of the storm right now with this midlife crisis shit. And it is.
Sorry.
No. It's just fucking cute. Where you're just like, hey, look at that. Everybody's starting to drop off. Hey.
So nothing the black pearl won't cure.
Nothing that sweet black pearl. Oh, no, not on my head. Those are, that's right.
I mean, the fucked up part is like,
do it either.
I don't know. Like, especially like the people we're around, you know, it's like, it's fucking crazy. Yeah. Like, it's crazy. Like, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, like I'll tell people, I'll be like, oh, yeah, I got to go to another thing or whatever. Like, oh, I got another, you know, and it's just like every, you know, it doesn't fucking end. You know, it doesn't end, but it's like not from fucking old age, you know,
yeah.
Not from fucking natural causes, right. You know, shit's fucking, it's scary.
We're all like little boys walking into the woods with a clown.
Yeah.
And
that sounds hot.
We're like, that sounds we're pretty scared. Hot. And like, you're scared. I got to walk out of these woods alone. But we're still in the woods. You know, the thing about it is we're still in the woods, and I never try to sugarcoat this for anybody who's trying to do this. This is a very difficult thing that we do. And, you know, I literally tell people I am blessed with these crazy thoughts and feelings that I have, which is my alcoholism, because it reminds me that it's still not safe to pick up a drink or use drugs.
Yeah. Mm.
I know I have another relapse in me. I absolutely know with all my heart I don't have another recovery in me. You will never fucking see me again.
Yeah. That's how it is for a lot of people. Yeah.
You know, I'm too old to do this. My cells aren't regenerating. Mm-hmm. It was very difficult at the age of 44 to get sober. It hurt for a long time, physically, emotionally, spiritually. It hurt really bad. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have another song you wanted to play?
Yeah. Do you want me to play like one of my more happy songs to balance that other one out? You want me to balance that? Because I have another new song that I wrote called Crawling Under the Ocean, which is...
I'm I have no need for happy songs.
Really?
You know? I mean, whatever you feel like Dude, playing. It's a privilege to have you play it all.
Fucking sorry if I play this song.
Let's do it.
You don't have to threaten me with the song.
Oh, I'll threaten you with the song.
Please don't. Don't hurt me. Don't hit me in the face with that song.
I could try, or I could play the song that I just released streaming on, you know, and do another self-promotion thing.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah.
Fucking A.
And do you have any shows coming up or anything you want to plug?
I do, yeah. Yeah, I have a show coming up at Gold Diggers on the 18th of December.
Nice.
And I'm going to be backed by Dash's band, Turtles on Speed.
Fuck, oh,
that's
going
to be so good.
Yeah.
Oh, we got to get Dash on.
Yeah.
Dash is amazing, you know, and I'm sure he has some incredible stories.
Oh,
yeah. So yeah, Dash is sweet, and yeah, it's gonna be great, man. Come see me with Turtles on Speed.
He's a phenomenal drummer, right?
Really great, yeah.
Yeah.
Really great, you know. So
good singer too.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll play The Road, which is the song that I just released. Can you give me a little bump for monitoring? This is called The Road, and it's not about traveling. People.
Out for me, I'm on the road. I believe in the unknown. I'm on the road. I believe and I don't know. They're up ahead and above. They say is infinite love. I'm on the road. I believe in the unknown. I'm on the road. I believe and I don't know. I was on the road to you. road it led to you. And I knew the road it led to you.
That was great.
Yeah.
Man. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I fucked up a bunch of times. You know, but that song is basically about the search for a higher power, you know, and believing in the unknown, like what you don't know. I believe in the unknown. I believe, and I don't know, because I don't need to fucking know. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's what that song's about. It's not about, I go here and I go there in my car. You know?
I got a sense it wasn't about just driving around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not.
The power in knowing that you don't have to have all the answers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. You know, so many people try to have a definitive vision of this thing that they need to rely on to help them. I don't put a face on it, man. You know what I mean? I'm just like, my curiosity is really my higher power.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know the answers to the great mysteries like love, death, God. But I write a lot of songs about them. I think they're the only things that are worth writing. Under those umbrellas, there's a lot of different subject matter.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree. Oh, that's George Jones' song is The Grand Tour.
The Grand Tour. Step right up. Come on in. Oh. If you like to take the Grand Tour.
That's awesome.
Dude, he's the true king of country.
Oh, George Jones. So
fucking no show Jones. One of my favorite. Just love him.
Can we forgive him for beating the shit out of Tammy Wynette, though?
Probably not.
Probably not.
You shouldn't lay your hands on a woman like that.
No. The stories of him crawling down the strip in Nashville, you know, just with his bodyguards around him, and the only thing you weren't allowed to do was touch him.
Yeah.
You couldn't touch him. You just let him. They'd just be just guys in nudie suits walking, you know, in $3,000-$4,000 suits in the 1970s.
Yeah,
walking around a grown man crawling down the street.
Just what about when she hit all the car keys? You know, he had like fucking 7 Cadillacs.
Yeah.
But she hit all the car keys and he rode a riding mower to the bar.
Oh, well, we all can relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to do. See, that's the thing. It's like, you know, they said, don't do drugs no matter what. I was like, no matter what? And I thought to myself, no matter what the consequences are. And I thought to myself, well, I would do drugs no matter what the consequences. And I can think of hundreds of consequences when you're in active addiction doing drugs. Cars crashing, the house is burning, blah, blah, blah. But like, what's the consequence for staying sober? And this is a tool that I use. I was like, think about the consequences for staying sober. And the only thing that I could really think of is that occasionally there's some discomfort coming from your alcoholism.
Yeah.
And you need to do a little bit of work to get back, you know, up to functioning, you know, speed. So one consequence as opposed to many, many
thousands.
Consequences. And I would do, I would do drugs no matter what the consequences are. So I turn that around. I stay sober no matter of what this consequence of being uncomfortable is. You know, you can sit it out. You can call your sponsor. You can do some inventories or whatever. But it's like when you get to know your alcoholism and you observe it and know and say, hey, old buddy, you've always been with me. I imagine you're always going to be with me, and I'm still not safe. Yeah. You know what I mean? And accept it. It's what I call radical acceptance for this thing that we have. And it is fucking real, man. It seems like it's a phantom, but it is fucking real.
That's great.
I mean, if it wasn't fucking real, then fuck, I wouldn't be fucking going to another memorial this Sunday.
Are you?
That's
fuck who this time?
This girl, Erica.
Jesus
Christ. Yeah, Ariana knew her. Gilbert. We all, I mean, like, they all grew up with her and shit. Oh. I met her in sobriety. Fucking crazy. You know, I got a quick story, you know, just to lighten the mood a bit. Kind of like the riding the lawnmower fucking thing, you know? I had a girlfriend who, like, I met this chick, you know, and fuck, it was like I met her and she was a model, and like I was on the train and we were riding the red line. I don't know what I was doing. I think I wanted to go like borrow $20 from my mom, you know, like that with that hustle.
Yeah.
And
strong.
Yeah, oh yeah. And I was riding the red line back and I saw her and she had like whatever, just some like jeans and like her butt was really nice. And I was like, fuck, I need that in my life, you know? And the train breaks down and we're at MacArthur Park and the train broke down, you know? And I was like, oh fuck. And I just copped too. Like, you know, somewhere right by there. And I think we got on the train and it didn't move. It just like, they were like, oh, sorry, the tracks are closed, you know? So everybody gets out and she's like, fuck, what do I do? And she's like a model, you know, like model hot. And, I go into like superhero mode where I'm like, all right, you know, like, I was like, if I like, cause I'm good at like, you know, I'm really good at putting on the front. Like I'm not the biggest fucking scumbag there, yeah. You know? So there's like an old couple and they're freaking out. They're like, oh no, what do we do? You know? And I was like, where do you guys stay? And they're like, oh, we're in fucking Santa Monica. And I'm like, here, fucking, I hail down a cab for them, you know? And like literally just throw them in the cab. And then there's like some Asian tourists, you know? And they're like, oh, you know, fucking. And I'm like, oh, where are you guys going? Like, oh, we're going to Hollywood. I'm like, here, hop on this bus. You know, like the 70, whatever, the fucking, the Wilshire bus pulls up, you know? I'm like, hop on this bus, get off and get on that bus, you know? And she kind of sees it out the corner of her eye. I'm all helping motherfuckers left and right. And I come up to her. I'm like, hey, where are you going? And she goes, oh, no, Hollywood, whatever. And I was like, oh, where are you coming from? She's like, oh, I was working at the California Gift Show. Mm. And that's where my mom was working.
Whoa.
So I'm like, oh, shit, my mom's working that too. You know, she's like, yeah, I was modeling for this thing. I'm like, let me see if my mom could give us a ride, you know? So right away, I'm like not a threatening fucking guy trying to just like kill her.
The active word being mom.
Mom, yeah. Let me see if my mom, yeah, fuck, because I don't have a car. I'm 21 years old and I'm taking the fucking train. She just moved here from New York. Like, what's my fucking excuse, you know? And, so then she was like, okay, you know, whatever. And like we ended up, I don't even remember how we got out of it. We probably caught a cab or what if something happened, you know, but then like she were talking and she's like, yeah, my ex-boyfriend was a junkie. I had to leave New York because of this and blah, 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 you know. And
you're like, she likes junkies.
Yeah, she likes junkies. Okay, you know. But she was like, yeah, it like fucking was a nightmare. So I tried to hide it from her really well, you know. And then like one day it fucking came. But what ended up happening, fuck it, I'll just tell the whole thing, is like I couldn't get it up anymore, you know. And because that's what happens with fucking with heroin. And she got like super depressed. Where
didn't
she
happen
it
to me,
something.
Danny. No way, man.
No way, not never. Speak for yourself, buddy. And so then she got really depressed and she's like, what's wrong? You know, is it me? Whatever. And I was like, fuck, you know, and like I saw it really affecting her and I was like, ah, fucking, I'm strung out on heroin. She's like, what? I fucking told you I left a different city to come here because of this whole thing, you know? And but she had that like codependent thing where like she, you know, like I knew she wasn't going to leave, you know? Yeah. So she was like, all right, you're going to detox at my house, whatever, you know? And and she's like, I'm going to take your shoes and your wallet. Because obviously she had done it with this fool before too. You know? She's like, I'm going to take your shoes and your wallet. And like, and she left to work, you know? And it was like, she left at like 7 a.m. And by 9 o'clock, I was like, fuck, there's no way I'm going to make it through this day, you know? And I found a jar of change and my cell phone, you know? And I found a jar of change like somewhere like, you know, digging around. And I got her like, you know, and I don't have any shoes. And I wasn't going to walk down. She lived off of like Hollywood and Bronson. And I wasn't going to walk down to my Connect barefoot, you know, like I didn't, you know. Like,
why not?
I don't know. But I put on, yeah, fuck, I don't know. But I put on, I found a pair of her like flip flops, you know, and she was like a size 6 Woodlands, you know, and I put them on, you know.
Bullshit.
Yeah, and like walked to my Connect house, you know, fucking banging on his door at like 9 in the morning. Brian, let me in. Yeah. Oh,
are we good?
I think you I want think another that's song, it, everybody. What's that?
Want another song to end the show?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. I mean this fuck one. Yeah,
I got to run to pick up Lawrence.
This one is. Okay. This will go quick, but this one will like cap it all off.
Yeah,
all
right, cool. Let's
beautiful.
Do it.
Yeah, play us out. Isn't that what they say on the show? Play us out.
Oh, yeah. I think you're played out. So I just have to tune a little bit. There's 12 strings here and all of them have to be in tune. So instead of playing Crawling Under the Ocean, which is really depressing. Crawling Under the Ocean, I couldn't take any more brutality. Crawling Under the Ocean, I would be lost on the shores of humanity. I'm going to play this song that I wrote called I Have Loved the Story of My Life. And, you know, basically this song is about having gratitude in despite the fact that we're coming from these really, really fucking tragic stories and stuff like that, and going to these tragic stories, it's like, well, how do you write a song about that? I mean, it's like in 4 minutes, describe that situation. Not very easy. Dewey Cox has to think about his whole life before he plays this song. Remember that? Walk Hard?
I love that movie. That was a sleeper.
Yeah. So this was a song I wrote called I Have Loved the Story of My Life. Even when I fall to pieces, I have had my ups and downs, but I'm still above the ground. Even when it makes me cry, I have loved the story of my life.
Perfect.
Nice little helicopter. Yeah, helicopter.
I thought the rhythm section was coming in.
That was pretty. That was some Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Dude. What a treat.
Yeah.
My God.
Thanks, man. You know, and it's like, despite all those things, we just have to have gratitude. You know, that's one of the most important things, I think, to use as a tool, a maintenance tool for this thing that we have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
So.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of what that song is about. Well, it is what that song is about. What am I saying?
Yeah. Dude, thank you so much.
Yeah,
thank you.
Speaking of grateful, we're grateful you came out, man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm grateful to be here. Thanks so much, you guys.
That was fucking great, Xander.
Thanks.
Yeah, man.
Wow.